Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Super excited to have our next guest on, Tyler Dragon, former college track and field athlete, now a reporter at the Cincinnati Inquirer covering the Bengals. He's joining us now. The pride of Clovis West High School in California. That's a big-time sports program, Tyler.
You guys did your research. Yes, Clovis West, they're a pretty good athletic school. I actually went there in large part because of athletics. So yes, nice research that you did there.
Well,
I'm a Clovis West Golden Eagle alum.
full disclosure, one of my early stops, I was a columnist at the Fresno Bee, and that, you know, I have fond memories of that area. Jerry Tarkanian was the coach at Fresno State at the time. It was a different time.
Yeah. When were you a columnist for the Fresno Bee?
Oh gosh, I was there right around 2000. Right around, okay. You were probably about 12 years old.
you're in the right ballpark, yes.
So let's talk Bengals, and then I really do want to talk track and field, because, you know, you were at UCLA, you were at Howard, you got a chance to compete at a high level, but let's talk about the Bengals. What are the possibilities at number 5 in the draft?
Well, you know, they are targeting Penei Sewell. They do like him. They're probably the top offensive lineman on their draft board, and they're very interested. I'll say that word instead of targeting. But I am hearing, according to sources, that the Bengals are really targeting LSU wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow's former teammate. He won the Fred Biletnikoff Trophy in that 2019 season where they won the national title. And so the Bengals, they're really looking at a receiver who will help fill the void of A.J. Green, who the Bengals let walk in free agency to the Arizona Cardinals. And Zach Taylor likes to run an 11-personnel offense, and that is basically 3 wide receivers, 1 running back, and a tight end. So they're missing a 3rd wide receiver. They do have Tyler Boyd in the slot. They have T. Higgins on the outside, but they are looking for another 3rd wide receiver who can be a possession receiver and can take the top off of the defense. Now, the problem is their offensive line is below average, in my opinion, and they need to be able to protect Joe Burrow a lot better. He did not last the entire season prior to his injury in week 11 in Washington, D.C. He was one of the most sacked and hit quarterbacks in all of football. So protecting him is a priority for the team, but from what I am hearing, they are going to draft probably a receiver in the first round, and then maybe address the offensive line in the second or even third round.
It's really interesting because, you know, Penei Sewell didn't play this last season. I wonder how much that factors here. Do you think more a matter of, is Burrow getting input here? Does he want to be reunited with a former teammate?
Well, Duke Tobin and Joe Burrow have both said publicly that Burrow is not lobbying for Ja'Marr Chase, Penei Sewell, Kyle Pitts, or whoever. Now, Duke Tobin, who is basically the Bengals' de facto GM, the team does not have an official GM, said that Burrow is aware of their draft board, and he is on the same page with the team as far as their draft philosophy and the players that they are interested in. And he is, you know, he does have an input, but the overall decision will be made by Duke Tobin, Zach Taylor, and the rest of the front office, Mike Brown, Katie Blackburn, and, you know, those people in the executive staff.
Tyler Dragon is our guest, Cincinnati Inquirer, Bengals writer. The offensive line, how bad is it?
Well, like I said, Joe Burrow was sacked 32 times prior to his injury, and the Bengals allow 48 sacks. That is an AFC North worst that they allowed in 2020. And they basically gave up the most amount of pressures in the division as well. And so we're talking about passing, but even run blocking was an issue. The Bengals only averaged 4.1 yards per carry. Yes, Joe Mixon did not play for a majority of the season, but even when he was in the lineup, the Bengals had trouble blocking and creating holes for him. So they were in the bottom half of the NFL in yards per carry average, and their pass blocking was atrocious last year. And like I said, and like we all know, Joe Burrow did not last the entire season. He blew out his knee in week 11, and that was basically because his pocket collapsed right in front of him, and the Washington football team, their defensive line, pretty much ate up the Bengals' offensive line. So they need to address the offensive line. They did add tackle Riley Reiff in free agency. They re-signed guard Quinn Spain. Those were good additions, and that is definitely, you know, a step in the right direction, but I don't think the Bengals should be completely satisfied with their offensive line. And Zach Taylor has told me personally, and Duke Tobin has said, that the Bengals still want to address the offensive line this offseason via draft. And maybe there are some still offensive linemen out in free agency that the Bengals can take a look at after the draft as well.
Now, you've been at this a while. You know that a lot of times you can't trust what you hear. There's some jockeying going on. Team, you know, maybe the Bengals know that somebody's sitting at 6, 7, or 8, value a wide receiver. Is it possible it's a smokescreen? Is it possible they're going Penei Sewell all the way, but they want to get somebody beneath them to maybe make a move up and give them something extra in the wash?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely possible. There's a lot of that going on during the days and weeks leading up to the draft. The decision isn't a lock by any means. The Bengals could definitely draft Penei Sewell. Rashawn Slater from Northwestern is even on their board. Kyle Pitts, the Florida tight end. They can go in a plethora of directions, but I am just hearing that they are, you know, really focused on LSU wide receiver Jamar Chase, and that's because he already has an established rapport with Joe Burrow, and they have a need at wide receiver with the departure of A.J. Green.
We're talking to Tyler Dragon of the Cincinnati Inquirer, covers the Bengals. It's really interesting because when you look at the top five picks in the draft, you got a bunch of teams up top that all need quarterbacks. It's almost like Cincinnati's picking number one again.
Yeah, it's they're lucky that they don't need a quarterback. They view Joe Burrow as their franchise QB. And like you said, the teams drafting ahead of them are pretty much going to draft a quarterback. We know for sure the top three picks will be QBs. Now, number four with the Atlanta Falcons, that's still up in the air, in my opinion. They can go many different ways. Wide receiver, offensive line, Penei Sewell could go to Atlanta. So that Falcons pick is really, in my opinion, where the draft really starts, because that's when, you know, a quarterback may or may not be selected.
It's interesting because, you know, you've got this experience as a college athlete, you know, at UCLA, at Howard University, a thrower. You know, you have competed at a high level. Does that help you in covering sports and covering teams and understanding athletes?
100%. That's a good question. You know, when you've been an athlete before on a pretty high level, you can understand where athletes are coming from, and you can relate to them. And that is really big in this industry, being able to relate to different athletes. And I've had so many conversations with athletes around the country about track and field and basketball and football, because I happen to have been an athlete before. And not even just in track and field. I was AAU basketball teammates with Brooke and Robin Lopez. So I have basketball experience as well, and I've been, you know, a football player with NFL athletes when they were in high school. So it definitely helps covering sports because you have that familiarity with the athletes on the field. Yes, I did not make it to the NFL or professional ranks, but just because I was in a, you know, pretty high level in college, it is definitely helpful, and you have that familiarity with the athletes, and it always helps to be able to talk sports, and the athletes kind of respect your perspective because you've been there before.
What was the difference with competing at UCLA and then the experience at Howard University?
Well, at UCLA, I was definitely not the man. I was a pretty high recruit coming out of high school to UCLA. But as you know, UCLA is one of those blue chip programs. Bright Life, one of the best athletic programs in the nation, over 100 national titles. So you don't get the Bright Lights when you go to a Howard University. But I wouldn't trade that decision. I don't regret that decision at all because Howard not only helped me on the athletic field, but also academically as well. They're both really great academic institutions, but you know, Howard just gave me just a little bit more than I got at UCLA because at UCLA I was more into sports and trying to go pro as opposed to Howard when I really focused on my academics. And, you know, sports was pretty secondary.
You've also worked at the Dallas Morning News and NFL.com. What was the experience at NFL.com like?
Wow, you're asking me a lot of questions. So NFL.com, that was in Los Angeles, my neck of the woods. I'm actually from California. NFL.com, working there, that was my first journalism job, and it was a great experience. It was my, you know, I learned a lot, covered the league at a very early age. And just being able to have that experience at the very beginning, that helped propel my career going into Dallas and coming to Cincinnati as well. Because when you cover the entire football league, covering just one team is a piece of cake. It's a lot easier, yeah. You know, really focusing down and covering just that one team like the Bengals.
Tyler Dragon, Cincinnati Inquirer, Bengals writer, is with us. They've got the number 5 pick in the draft. You mentioned Joe Burrow. I mean, you know, he had his left knee reconstructive surgery. What is the timeline for him to be 100%? Is he on track? You know, is there any concern with the Bengals that Burrow will have some lasting effects?
Well, Burrow said this week that he is still aiming for a week one return, and that is pretty much 9 months post-surgery. He had surgery December 2nd in Los Angeles. So his type of knee operation and his recovery timeline is pretty much 9 to 12 months. So if he does indeed return week one, it is on the early end of that timeline, and he is still confident that he'll be able to. Duke Tobin is confident, and Zach Taylor, so they are on the same accord. However, they're not going to rush him back. They're going to make sure that he is 100% and that left knee will be able to withstand hits in the National Football League, because like I said, they view him as a franchise cornerstone and a franchise quarterback, and they want Joe Burrow in Cincinnati for many years to come and not just have a short lifespan. So they're going to be extremely cautious with him and his recovery. But based on everything that I'm hearing out of the organization and coming out of Joe Burrow's mouth is that he is doing well 5 months after his procedure.
All right, Tyler Dragon, you're the best. I appreciate you making time for us. I wish you the best.
No problem. Thanks for having me on, and I enjoy talking track and field with you as well.
There you go. All right. The pride of Clovis West High School, Tyler Dragon, their sports high school powerhouse there in California. You know, he's a shot putter. He's a discus thrower, and now he's covering the Bengals. I want to go to Zach real quick on this. It doesn't make sense to me that, you know, yes, I know you're reuniting you know, Joe Burrow with his college receiver, and you've got a lot of rhythm and continuity there, but it's show business, not show friends. And everything else that we heard there from Tyler was, you know, how the Bengals offensive line is not good and Joe Burrow's the future. I have to think the Bengals, if they're not bluffing here, go with an offensive lineman at five.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I understand that Ja'Marr Chase is the sexy pick. Like, I mean, I get the, you know, the chemistry that he has with Joe Burrow already. But at the end of the day, I truly believe the smart decision for the long term is to build that offensive line. I think that's what championship franchises do, is they go with the offensive line, which is, you know, second to the quarterback, the most important position group in the entire, in all of football. So Penei Sewell is the top offensive lineman. I think you would be crazy to go with anyone else at that point. But I do think there's something to them talking about Ja'Marr Chase so much, and you hit on it a little bit, about maybe kind of drawing some interest from another team that might be looking to get a top receiver at that spot.
Yeah, and that's what you do there is, you know, all the whispers. Like, you know, all, the people who cover the NFL will tell you you can't trust anybody right now. You can't listen to anybody you can't trust. You got to read the tea leaves. And all I kept thinking about was there are some good receivers in this draft. Like, you can get a good receiver in the second round. You can get a good receiver later in the first round if the Bengals want to make a move. So why would you, in this case, start talking about the guy you want at five unless you knew somebody at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 really valued him? And I know the Chargers have been talking about Penei Sewell a lot. I talked to Penei Sewell's agent today. I'm efforting getting him on the show. But I don't trust that the Bengals are really going to go wide receiver there unless, like, they are so in love with Ja'Marr Chase there that they make that move. All right, leave it here. The Big Splash coming up next. Every day in the program, we do the Big Splash. Today, it has to do with numbers and Tom Brady.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there. Must be
the Big Splash. Brought to you by the Exergen Twice Daily Thermometer.
A lot of NFL players have expressed some excitement over the newly adopted rule in the NFL that allows some flexibility when it comes to numbers worn on players' jerseys. But Buccaneers quarterback Tom Brady is not a fan. Brady went to Instagram today to express his dissatisfaction with the rule change. He says it's going to cause a safety issue for the offense, such as identifying blitzers or who's the middle linebacker of the defense. He said, good luck with trying to block the right people now. Going to make for a lot of bad football. Basically, the NFL's new rule allows quarterbacks, punters, and place kickers to wear numbers 1 through 19. Defensive backs to wear 1 through 49. Running backs, tight ends, wide receivers, 1 through 49 and 89 and 90. Essentially, Brady having an issue with the players' numbers being changed. He wants things to stay status quo, and he sounds a lot like an old man out on his lawn, upset with the rule. Look, when you do things one way for, what, 20, 21 years, Tom Brady? I don't blame him for being frustrated with it. But I also understand that the league is trying to create a little more fun, a little more be a little bit more like the college game with the number scheme. And I actually like the big guys wearing little numbers. I don't know. There's something about seeing a defensive lineman wearing like number 5 that I like. Tom Brady having problems with the NFL's uniform number rule. Will the NFL pay attention to Brady? You tell me, Peter Sampson, Zach, will Brady's belly aching cause the NFL to reconsider?
Honestly, I don't think so. It's kind of like the helmet deal, a couple with Brady and who was that? Aaron Rodgers, obviously Antonio Brown as well. I think he's allowed to bellyache, but I don't think it's going to make any difference.
Yeah, I completely understand where Tom Brady's coming from. I didn't really think about it in that light, really. I didn't really think about the fact that, oh, yeah, like position groups, you know, specific number groupings, and that can affect how you're reading a play as a quarterback. But, I mean, that sounds like a personal problem for Tom Brady. So, you know, the great ones adapt. He'll adapt. And I don't think at the end of the day the NFL is going to change their mind on this based on Tom Brady's opinion. But Tom Brady, at the same time, has a right to bellyache.
It made me feel like, I guess he's earned it because of his time in the league, but it made me feel like there may be a little more to the audible scheme with some teams that has to do with calling out, you know, certain jersey numbers and calling out, you know, when they know when it's a single digit number, they're probably, you know, a number that's in a certain classification. They're talking about defensive back and not a linebacker. And now people are going to have to really be thinking on the offensive side of the ball. Is this a rule change that benefits the defense? I just think it's more of a classic look. Like, you get to see, you know, some defensive linemen wearing number 50 or wearing number 60 or linebackers wearing number 3. Like, I sort of like it.
Yeah, I think it does kind of give the defense a little bit of an advantage, maybe at first, but then over time, of course, people will adapt. You know, you see people in college, you know, numbers are all over the place. The only thing as a fan that concerns me is, you know, I love seeing a guy like Saquon Barkley. He tweeted something last night about, can you see me in any other number besides 26? And I responded, no, I can't. Like, I'm just so used to 26. And for me as a fan, I want you to keep that number. I'm not even a Giants fan. But I don't know. At the end of the day, right, the NFL is just trying to make the league a little bit more fun.
Are they also trying to sell merchandise? Because you're going to get a bunch of changes with numbers. So is this an opportunity for the NFL teams to make some money?
Yeah, absolutely. And didn't they say something about if you're going to change your number this season, you have to buy out all the remaining merchandise that's out there with your current number? I'm pretty sure that's what the NFL said.
Oh, I love that. There'll be some guys that do it. It never ceases to amaze me because I can remember in high school, when you show up to get your number, and I always wanted 42, okay? I wanted 42 for Jackie Robinson. I wanted 42 for Ronnie Lott. I wanted 42. And I wanted 42 in baseball, basketball, football. It didn't matter. I wanted locker 42. If I go to the gym and they're handing out lockers and there's a number 42, I wanted it. So I always find it's interesting, though, how people just associate or gravitate towards numbers in general. And you think that when players became professionals that they let go of it, but you'll see it and you'll hear about it when like a guy's traded to another team and you see all the deals that are made to get a jersey and, you know, Tom Brady wanting his number in Tampa. That became a thing when he moved to Tampa. So I just think it's really interesting to watch how weird people get when you start messing with jersey numbers and the players are the worst themselves. I don't even think that was the best rule that came out of the rule changes for the NFL. I thought the best rule was the rule that gave the replay official kind of the authority to get in the ear of the referee and kind of move the game along and be like, hey, you know what? That we got that call wrong. We need to take another look at it without a flag needing to be thrown, because for a long time that has happened anyway. Veteran officials in the NBA will tell you that in NBA games, the NBA officials prior to replay used to look over at like the home or visiting media members who had access to the television monitors. And often it was like the radio play-by-play person. And, you know, Mike Barrett, formerly with the Blazers, would tell you like the officials will sometimes look at him and go, did we get that right? Because they know you're watching the TV replay. Well, now the NFL officials have the ability to have the head replay official kind of whisper in their ear a little bit.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.